Hello, and welcome back to the Nutrition Nourishment Podcast, a podcast where I talk my guests through their journeys in nutrition. I'm Amelia, and your host of the Nutrition Nourishment Podcast. I'm currently a student nutritionist, recently graduating from the University of Leeds in Food Science and Nutrition with an international year, and I have just begun my master's at UCL in Clinical and Public Health Nutrition. While I am working towards my accreditation, I am not yet an accredited nutritionist. Nothing which is said on this podcast should be taken as personalised nutritional advice. If you would like nutrition advice, you can contact a registered nutritionist, dietitian, or your GP. Other resources available to you include the NHS and the BDA websites. Now, let's get on with the podcast. I am so excited to be talking with Sophie today about her nutrition journey. Sophie's journey began with an undergraduate degree in psychology. Her passion and love for nutrition grew, leading her to a master's in nutrition and eating disorders. Along her way, Sophie made lots of big decisions and shared some great advice and experiences with us today. I am so excited to share with you how Sophie got to where she is now as a registered nutritionist with her own company and working at the Retrition Clinic. Welcome to the Nutrition Nourishment Podcast, sharing our journeys. Hello Sophie, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm really well, thank you. I've just been enjoying the lovely weather September's had for us.
I know, very, very nice.
Thank you so much for talking with me today. I know how busy you must be, so it's really great to meet with you and learn about your nutrition journey, which I'm really excited to be sharing today. Would you start us off by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, definitely. So my name is Sophie Bertrand and I am a registered nutritionist. My background is in psychology, but I then decided to switch and do nutrition. I am founder of Sophie's Healthy Kitchen, which is my business. I have recently launched my own podcast with my co-host Barry, who's a registered dietitian, and we have just co-authored our first book together, which is very exciting. Wow. And what else? I also got married this year. I have a very cute dog. Very recently, yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. And I have a very cute dog called Bear.
Yes.
And that's pretty much me.
You know what? Your dog looks like the sweetest thing.
Like the best compliment you can give me is like telling me Bear is cute. So thank you so much.
And that comes from someone who is petrified of dogs. So,
oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm very grateful.
It sounds like you've had an amazing journey and right up to creating your own business and being a registered nutritionist. But shall we take it back to the start of your journey, which was in psychology? And that's an area that really interests me too. Mm. So where did your interest in psychology begin?
I don't know, to be honest. I remember even though I didn't do A-levels at school, I always wanted to do psychology. And I remember just saying to my mum, I just want to do psychology as an A-level, and you had to choose three. I actually ended up moving over to college and getting a diploma in fashion and textiles, which is completely irrelevant to my life. But when I realized that the fashion world wasn't for me, I was like, I have to go back and do psychology, because it was just, I don't know, it's just always been such an interest to me. I love the mind and how our mental health can impact our behaviors and vice versa. So yeah, I went to do psychology. I did the foundation in psychology because I didn't have relevant A-levels. I had a diploma in fashion, but it was like completely irrelevant to psychology. So I had to go back and do the foundation first. And then I wasn't sure if I was going to do the degree, but when I was coming to the end of my foundation course, one of my lecturers said to me, we offer academic scholarships, because it was a ridiculously expensive university. Mm. And she was like, you should apply. So I was like, okay, like I'll just apply and see what happens. And I got it. So the fact that like I managed to halve my uni fees, I was like, I might as well just go for it. And I absolutely loved it. It was really challenging. Mm. I think psychology is a lot more difficult than people realize. But yeah, I absolutely loved it. And going into third year, I realized that to actually be a psychologist, it was going to be like another at least 3 or 4 years of studying. And as much as I did love psychology, I wanted to use it in a different realm. So
yeah,
I switched over to nutrition.
because psychology does have such an input into nutrition.
It does.
I took psychology at A-level, and like you, I hadn't studied it before, but there was just something that really gripped my attention with it, talking about like theories on the way we think and then the effect on our mood and our sleep. I thought sleep was such an interesting topic.
I'm obsessed with sleep.
Yes. And it all comes together, doesn't it? And I remember thinking, because my undergraduate degree is in nutrition, but I thought I didn't want to let psychology go. And I thought studying nutrition, I could still have a piece of that, which I really enjoyed. Yeah.
And I don't think people realise how science-based psychology is as well.
No, it's tough.
It's really tough.
Do you find that you use your psychology degree now much?
I do, actually. And because I am so interested still in psychology, I do a lot of reading and research around it as well. So I feel like it's always quite fresh in my mind. Mm. And I do think with degree, unless you actually go into something so specific to what you've studied, you just pass the exam and then forget everything you've done. Whereas with psychology and nutrition, you have to remember it and retain the information because you use it in your practice every day.
That's so good to hear as well, isn't it?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. I know, like, when you're sat in class learning, you're like, I am going to use this. And I think that became more obvious the last 2 years, I think.
Yeah.
In my international year, I had the opportunity to pick some of my own modules, and I really enjoyed being able to stretch out.
Me too.
Yeah, and that's what I enjoy about doing CPD. You just mentioned that you keep up with psychology. I've looked into the British Psychological Society quite a bit for like that interest.
Definitely.
So coming out of your psychology undergraduate degree, what did you get up to?
So everyone was talking about what masters they were going to do. And because my degree was 4 years, because of the added year I did with the foundation, I was just so ready to not study again for a while. And everyone was like, what are you going to do your masters in? And I was like, I'm not doing a masters. I was that done. Like, I've done my degree now. I'm going to go out and work or whatever. And I actually went traveling down the West Coast, which was just amazing. I spent... So 3 years in a row, I spent 3 summers there. I'd love it over there. But anyway, when I was over there, the way in which they're like, their version of wellness over there is quite different to where we're at, I think, especially in LA. Mm-hmm. So at that time, I did have a very different approach and perception of what health and wellness was. I didn't have the healthiest relationship with food growing up. And in that time between my psychology and going back to do my nutrition studies, I probably had orthorexic tendencies. So what I thought was healthy, I wouldn't say it was healthy now, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I had this real interest in, okay, what is healthy? How, trying to be as healthy as I possibly could be. So when I was over in LA, I was in that world and I was like, I really want to go and pursue nutrition after this. So when I got back from LA, I Googled, you know, how to become a nutritionist. And I really didn't want to have to go back and do further studying, but I realized that in order to be a registered nutritionist, you do have to put in the extra qualifications. So I was like, if I don't do it now, I'm going to regret it. So that's exactly what I did. And like I said, I realized that actually what I thought was healthy actually probably wasn't so healthy. And yeah, that was the start of my nutrition journey. Like I said, it's really what I thought was healthy back then is really different to what I would label health now.
Yeah, because you just mentioned having orthorexic tendencies. Could you just explain that a little to our listeners if they don't quite know what it is?
Yeah, definitely. So it's basically the... I always get not confused, but I wonder what the best way to word this is, because I don't like the word obsession, but it is defined as having an obsession with healthy food and things being pure, or again, through lack of better words, just like clean. And it's basically when what you think healthy becomes unhealthy, because when you cut out so much from your diet to pursue health, that obviously leads to, you know, deficiencies and other problems. So it's basically clean eating to round it up.
I think sometimes what's forgotten when you say, oh, I'm a nutritionist or I'm a student nutritionist, is that food is there for enjoyment too. It's like social, that enjoy your diet, enjoy your food, enjoy your life. And when that enjoyment's not there, that's when it's a bit worrying.
Definitely. And there's still, I think, an expectation that comes with being a nutrition professional. If you're going out for dinner, for instance, people will say, oh, well, you're obviously going to have a salad because you're a nutritionist and you're super healthy, or, oh my, you're having a piece of chocolate cake, like, aren't you a nutritionist? And it's like, there's still that kind of...
I just can't believe it.
I know, it's awful, isn't it?
And how do you overcome that, Sophie?
Oh, I challenge it. I'm like, why shouldn't I have a piece of cake? I'm not automatically unhealthy because I'm having a piece of chocolate cake. Look through my feed and you'll see I'm the biggest chocoholic ever.
It's chocolate all the way.
Definitely.
And I think there's this misconception that if you eat a piece of chocolate cake on one day, that defines your whole diet. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't at all.
I know. I always say, like, one salad isn't going to make you healthy and one piece of cake isn't going to make you unhealthy. Like, and labeling those foods healthy or unhealthy or good or bad, again, is just so unhelpful. So yeah. I like to just say that some foods contain more nutrients than others.
Oh, I like that. I know the word healthy, and I put it, I don't, what are these
in quotes?
Yeah, in quotes.
Like, air quotes.
Yeah, it's so subjective as a word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is just so ridiculous to think that one single food is the holy grail.
Yeah, and do you think your master's really helped you understand that and learning after your degree as well?
Definitely the experience after my degree. Mm. I mean, arguably, I've learned as much.
Yeah.
As, obviously, just in different ways. But it was very, very clinical based, my practice. So a lot of it, we did placements in hospitals, and it was also eating disorder focused. So it didn't necessarily teach me that all foods are fit, which is what I do believe. But it definitely opened my eyes to a different world of nutrition and how different it actually is in so many different settings. We have public health, and then we obviously have the intuitive eating movement, and there's gut health, and there's heart health, and there's your skin health. There's so many different areas of nutrition, and they can all be fields of their own to some degree, because you know, if you're eating for gut health, that might be very different to someone who doesn't suffer with any digestive discomfort and can eat what they want comfortably without suffering symptoms.
That's a really interesting thought, and there's so many areas of nutrition. What interests you?
So intuitive eating is my thing. It's the approach that I use in my practice at the Retrition Clinic, which is where I see clients. I'm currently studying my pre and postnatal nutrition diploma. I did cover that in my degree, but I just want to do more of like a top up slash more of a focus on it. I love research on skin health. I'm obsessed with like looking after my skin. So that's just like a personal interest of mine. I also am fascinated with the research around sleep and how that affects overall well-being, and food and mood, I think, is really interesting. So yeah, lots of different areas. But yeah, like I said, intuitive eating is the approach that I use when working with clients.
And did you learn that during your degree, or was that after? And
then No, not at all, actually.
Do you have any resources that you recommend?
Yeah, so intuitive eating was, it's funny because when I went in to study nutrition, my goal has always been, I want to find this way or approach. And I knew nothing about intuitive eating at this point. I hadn't even heard of it. But I wanted to find this way that we could enjoy food in a balanced way whilst just supporting our overall health. Because like you said at the beginning, food should be enjoyment. And I think that messaging was lost along the way. And we were so fixated on weight and being super healthy. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, like, weight was more important than health. And so I kept thinking to myself, I was like, there must be an approach that can support health and happiness when it comes to food. So when I graduated, the intuitive eating movement was becoming bigger on social media, and I started to look into it, and I wasn't fully sold on it initially because I was like, lots of people have lots of different questions around it, and it can be confusing if you're new to the approach. But the more research I did, the more books I read, I was like, actually, this makes real sense, and it finally resonates with how I want to practice. So I did Laura Thomas's course at the London Centre of Intuitive Eating, and that really molded how I practice now. I, you know, continue to keep up with the research around it. There is more research coming out about it, but the more I do practice and read on it, the more I'm like, yes, this makes so much sense. And I've helped so many people through using this as well. So many people have benefited from it. And I myself now identify as an intuitive eater.
It's amazing to hear how much you've continued to learn and grow in the profession since graduating as well. And you mentioned Laura Thomas just there. I've recently read her book, Just Eat It, which was fantastic. And I think for me, that was the first time my eyes have really been open to intuitive eating. I've heard the term been used before, but I've never read about it. Definitely not in as much detail. And what I really enjoyed about the book was that it took you through exercises, and it was just really fascinating to learn more about it. And you just mentioned as well how much weight got brought into health, and they're very independent things, and it's something that I hope we're trying to overcome.
Definitely. Yeah. When I first came out of uni, because you don't get taught how to work with clients in your degree either, which I know a lot of students struggle with that. But when I first started working with Rhiannon Lambert, she really, again, helped mold my practice, because she just had such a way with clients. And if I hadn't gotten to shadow her in clinic, I've learned the ways in which I practice from her, because it's one thing to have all the information in regards to nutrition and educating people, but it's another thing to actually translate that into motivating someone to make changes. When someone's putting their well-being in your hands, that's a huge responsibility. Mm-hmm. And I do know, I'm very aware that a lot of students come out of university and they want to practice with clients, but they just have not got the experience under their belt because the degree doesn't offer that. There's so much to cover in nutrition that they can't do everything.
For sure. And it's something that I'm looking into at the moment, because I've just come out of my 4-year degree in food science and nutrition from the University of Leeds, and I'm going on to my master's at UCL. I feel lucky that we have, I think in term two, some time to hopefully get into hospitals. But it's been amazing to talk with nutritionists like yourself about your journeys and both the highs and lows.
Yeah, like I said, I continue to learn, I really do, and I continue to alter my practice in a way that I think will benefit people more, because I think all nutrition professionals will agree, we just want to help people.
Yeah.
And we're not going to get it right all the time, we're not for everyone. There's so many different ways in which you can practice and so many different areas in which you can go into, but I do think as long as you're just trying to better yourself and your practice, then, you know, hopefully you can only do good for people.
I hope so. So you came out of your master's as an associate registered nutritionist.
Yes.
How was it in those, was it 3 years after that you transferred?
It was, so when I did my postgraduate, the course was undergoing its evaluation to become accredited. So they were like, in a few more months, we'll be accredited and then you'll be added to the register. But I was just super keen to be added to the register as soon as possible. So I actually applied via portfolio. So I graduated, I think, in 2017. And then the following maybe 8 or 9 months, the portfolio process was just as basically long as the accreditation for the degree. But then I was accredited. So I had been a nutritionist essentially for 3 years, but I'd been registered as an associate nutritionist for 2 years. But I'm just super keen like that. And I just got in touch with the AFN. I was like, look, I've got 3 years experience under my belt. I'd love to apply early. And they were like, okay, like if you think you've got enough experience under your belt, present us with your portfolio. I did, and it got accepted. So
that's amazing.
Thank you.
Do you have any advice on applying via portfolio?
It's a long process. I would just say block out 5 days and just do it. Don't do it bit by bit. I think in terms of the portfolio process from associate nutritionist to registered nutritionist, collect all your CPD as you're going along. Do not leave it to one big job at the end. Like I have folders on my laptop, and every time I do CPD, I just add the certificate or the reflection work or the notes to a folder, just so it's all in one place. So just be prepared from the get-go, because it is literally a huge job for you if you haven't prepared for it along the way. It really is. Yeah, organization is key.
Oh yeah, I can see that. And regarding CPD, what stuff do you look for? Where do you find yours?
So the AFN website are actually a really good resource for CPD courses. I also, if I do have something that I'm thinking, oh, I want to brush up my knowledge on that, then I'll actively go out looking for it. NutriWeb, they do really great free lectures, which count towards CPD, so that's a good resource for students. But like I said, just even with my pre and postnatal one that I'm about to start, I just Googled pre and postnatal accredited CPD courses. And I think there's two that are accredited. And I did ask Rhiannon, who's my mentor, which one do you think's better? So sometimes it's worth just asking other nutritionists. If you do have an interest in a certain topic, I want to do this. Do you know of any really good CPD courses that I can do?
And I've definitely found that just talking to other nutritionists or dietitians within the field has been so helpful, and everyone's been so lovely.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just message people on Instagram. The worst they can do is not message you back. So if you are on social media, I would definitely just say connect with as many health professionals as possible, because it's nice to know that you've got allies and friends in the industry.
Yeah, it's so lovely coming out of my degree being able to see where other people are at in their journeys and think that's where I could get to, hopefully, and keep on working and keep on training, because it's exciting to be able to help people.
Definitely. And I think it's so important. I think, to me, feeling supported is one of the best feelings. So I do try and support students and get back to everyone as much as I can, because I was that person once. I was hounding Rhiannon for work experience.
Yeah, but it's so greatly appreciated, Sophie.
Aww.
And that's brought us onto the conversation of social media, and obviously we've connected via Instagram. Do you want to tell us a little bit about when you got onto Instagram and your journey through that?
So when I initially got onto Instagram, honestly, I had no idea what it even was. Like, I remember asking my sister, like, what shall I write with the picture? But at the time, I had my own personal page, and then I was like getting into food and nutrition and stuff. And I was like, I want to start a foodie blog, because I used to get my inspiration off of other people's images and blog posts. So I thought, oh, I'll just like post what I'm doing and see if anyone pays an interest. So that's what I did. I think it was 4 years ago now. And it has changed my social media page. I mean, originally I was admittedly healthifying sweet foods. So I'd make like red velvet cakes, but with beetroot. And I don't know, I'd be like, oh, I'm using whole wheat flour instead of white flour because it's healthier. And that's not to say I make, I don't know, what's an example? I don't know, like those date balls or something. I'm not saying, oh, look, this is a really healthy snack because I made it with dates. I just like dates, and it's nice to experiment with different ingredients in the kitchen sometimes. But you'll also see like brownies made with butter and sugar on my page as well. So yeah, that's what I started doing originally. And then I just found it really fun just to have this little Instagram space, and there were other foodies on there that I was communicating with, and that was really nice. And it just grew. I did start my food page before I did my degree. I think it was a year before I went to do my nutrition degree. And then I started to make it more nutrition based and foodie based. And yeah, it's just grown from there, really.
That's brilliant. And I think you raised a really interesting point just there about healthifying sweet foods. Because like you said, there is nothing wrong with it if you enjoy it and if that's something that you're going to get more out of. But ultimately, if you enjoy a brownie, you don't need to add sweet potatoes
to it. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with making something a little bit more nutrient dense if you want like a nutritious snack that's going to fill you up throughout the day or whatever. But again, like, let's not only make sweet potato brownies because they're healthier. Like, if you want a brownie, please make yourself a normal brownie.
Oh, and put some white chocolate chips in it. That's my favorite.
White chocolate is everything.
It really is. Like, I would have maybe a piece of dark chocolate with a cup of coffee, but if I want a brownie, it's got to have some white chocolate chips in it.
Definitely. White chocolate cookies.
We got some the other day and they weren't like, you know, the bigger ones. They weren't those. It was like a small crunchy thing. Oh, I was like, it's just not the same
as a small cookie.
No, I was like, it's not the same as the big chewy ones. So obviously your Instagram page is growing and you have a really great audience. What's your favorite thing about being on there?
I mean, I haven't got the biggest following, but I do recognize that I do have a following.
Yeah.
And I know that there's trolls out there and there's people that aren't very nice to you on Instagram, but I'm really, really lucky in the sense that I just have a really lovely, supportive following. Genuinely, everyone that follows me is so sweet. Like, Bear was ill a few weeks ago and just the amount of concern and messages I got about him was really, really lovely. And I just feel like it's a nice, positive place. My version of social media, anyway. I know there are things that happen on it that aren't so pleasant, and it can be quite challenging for some people in different ways. But the way in which I've built out my page, I think, is a really positive place. So.
That's amazing to hear, and it's so positive. And Sophie's Healthy Kitchen has come about as well, your business. Do you want to talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so honestly, I mean, healthy, like you said, the definition is different for everyone, but I wanted to encourage people to form a healthy relationship with food, which is where Sophie's Healthy Kitchen came from. And I wanted to break down what is healthy, because healthy does include chocolate and it does include all your favourite foods. So yeah, I had no idea that it was going to turn into what is now my business, but I just jumped on Instagram and called it Sophie's Healthy Kitchen. And when I finished my degree, I started working with Rhiannon. And then I think after about 9 months of working with her, I was building up Sophie's Healthy Kitchen on the side. And I knew at that point I really did want to run my own business. I had a very clear vision of what I wanted to do. And I just took the plunge and I dedicated my time to building it. And I couldn't have done that without my now husband, who was my boyfriend at the time. But it was tough. Like, I'm not going to say, oh yeah, I just started my own business and it was great, because it wasn't. And there were times where I was like, oh, can I actually do this? Can I support myself? But you don't know if you don't try. So I kept at it. And even now, I don't in any way, I'm not like, oh yeah, I've done it. Like, I've got my own business and it's great. I hustle every day. Like, it's tough, but I love it at the same time. So
it's fantastic. You've achieved a lot in quite a short amount of time. You've got so much yet to come on your journey.
Thank you.
And you did mention a little bit about some other projects that you've been working on, a podcast and a book. Do you want to talk to us about those?
Yeah, definitely. So almost a year ago, one of my best friends, Barry, we did our masters together. We just constantly just had these conversations around nutrition and wellness and health. And we all have to be professional when we're in the nutrition industry. But at the same time, we wanted to push it a little bit further and have those conversations that maybe people weren't having around health and wellness, that we just wanted to make it really approachable and relatable. And sometimes on Instagram, let's say you're looking for nutrition advice, it's confusing and you don't know who to trust, or it seems really unrealistic because it's so all or nothing. So we really just wanted to open up the conversation, which is what we did. And we started our podcast. And then off the back of that, we were approached by a publishing company who asked if we'd be interested in writing a book. And we were like, yes. So we wrote a book also titled Forking Wellness, which is the same as the podcast. And I am just so pleased and proud of this book, because it's something that I have always thought about doing, writing a book. And the fact that I got to do it with my best friend and include everything that we wanted to, it's honestly, like, there's so much information. I genuinely believe it's going to help so many people. And obviously it's like a huge proud moment in my career.
When will it be officially out?
It will be on the shelves in January, but you can pre-order it now on Amazon.
How exciting. And I think the thing about your podcast and book and the Instagram is it's making your knowledge even more accessible to even more people, because not everyone can see you one-to-one. Wow, I'm so excited for you, and I'll definitely be going and having a look for a pre-order of that.
Thank you.
How did you come up with the name?
So Barry and I were like, we were actually sat in a cafe in London together brainstorming what we could call it. And we wanted to really challenge, we wanted the name to be representative of what we were trying to do. And we were like back and forth with names, and I think we came up with like Shut the Fork Up or something like that. And we were like, that sounds a little bit too aggressive. So, and then we just came up with Forking Wellness, and it was a play of what the F is, wellness. And we were like, yeah, that's the name.
It's definitely very memorable.
Thank you.
So talking more about your experience from after you graduated, you mentioned that Rhiannon Lambert was your mentor and you've worked with her in the Re-Trishing Clinic.
Yeah, she's now a really good friend of mine. I do think it's really important to have a mentor if you want to see clients. Honestly, it's invaluable. You shouldn't actually be seeing clients without a mentor. That's what the AFN will tell you. Rhiannon, who again is an incredible mentor, but I have so many different people in the field, even Barry, who's a registered dietitian. It's really good to get input or insight from as many different professionals that you admire in the field, because like I said, it is challenging sometimes knowing how to navigate it, especially when you're on social media. If you have a following, however big or small that might be, you do have a responsibility as a nutrition professional. And yes, not everyone's going to like what you're putting out there, but when I used to do more nutrition-based posts, actually, I'd reread them and I'd reread them, and I'd think, okay, what type of people might be following me? Might someone find this offensive? and you have to vet yourself before you put whatever you're going to put out there. I now, in terms of the nutrition information I put out there, I do tend to keep it more blog focused, or I'll very rarely do a very detailed nutrition post on just a main feed. I like to have the whole, like I said, on a blog post or something like that, just so it's not too much snippets of information. Because again, when you're just giving out little bits of information, that can be interpreted in so many different ways.
That's really good advice. I like having it more on your blog, on your website, and then sharing more recipes and food on your Instagram.
That's good to know.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like if people want to then read the big posts, they can, but not everyone wants to read it on the small tiles.
Exactly. Well, something I used to do as well, I sometimes still do, is I'll give a little snippet of what I'm talking about in the blog. And then I say, if you are more interested in the topic, then head over to my website and there's more information.
That's brilliant. And your website's recently had a change up, hasn't
it? Yeah, it was about time. I mean, the website was the blog that I originally started. And I don't know enough, or I didn't have the time to invest in making it look like a proper website. So I worked with a designer, Sophie, and she was amazing. She literally did it in a week. She worked off of what I had, but she done the whole thing. So yeah, now I feel like it's a proper website and resource that people can
amazing.
Go to. Thank you.
You mentioned how when coming out of your degree, registered associate nutritionist, and then it's 2 to 3 years, depending on your experience, before you can transfer to a registered nutritionist, in which time you need to gain a lot of experience in the setting and you need to have a mentor. Could you tell us a bit more about how you do it, having a mentor and things like that?
Yeah, definitely. So like I said, if you do want to practice with clients, it's really, really important to have a mentor. But also, it really depends on what area you're in. You might be a nutritionist for a company and that might be a full-time job, or you might be in the public health sector or whatever. If you are freelance and you're working on various different projects and you're doing brand consultancy, again, it's really useful to have that person that you can check in with and say, this is what I'm working on. This is the role that I've got. This is how I plan on navigating it. What do you think? Even just stuff like that. Or just to check in sometimes and be like, do you think I could increase my knowledge in this area? Or this person wants to hire me, but I feel like I might be a little bit inexperienced. What advice can you give? So I know it's difficult to find a mentor as well. I am aware of that. But it's also just helpful to know, like I said, just message other health professionals or nutrition professionals, email them, get in touch. Not all of them are going to reply, but you never know, some might. So yeah, just network with as many people that you can that you think are on the same wavelength as you.
That's such invaluable advice. And I've definitely found, I'd say over the past 6-7 months, I've been reaching out to more and more people, and it's true, it's really helpful to talk it out and being able to talk and relate to someone else who's been through all of it.
Yeah, definitely.
I just want to talk to you a little bit more about some of your other interests. I know we've spoken about intuitive eating before, but as well, mood. It comes back to your psychology background, I guess. It's an area that really intrigues me, but whenever I try and research or read, I can't find as much as I'd like to. So what do you do?
Well, there is a section in our book on food and mood for anyone who's interested. When it comes to specific things that I'm really interested in, journal articles are the most reliable resources. And I know not everyone wants to sit and read journal articles because they're so long, but you can always read the abstract and see if you want to read the whole thing afterwards. But there are some really, really good resources out there. But yeah, I think journal articles is the gold standard when it comes to research, because you could literally type in, especially something like skin health and nutrition, and you'll probably find something in, like, I don't know, some wellness magazine.
So hard, isn't it? And I think it comes back to as well, everyone is unique and everyone's different.
Exactly. Yeah. And as much as we can rely on the research that we have, that's never, ever going to apply to everyone. We can have the research there that supports a hypothesis, but again, that's never going to apply to every single person.
For sure. I think what I've understood from your journey is that your inspirations have changed from back when you started studying psychology, but in which ways?
This is going to sound really cliche, but I'm really, really passionate now about supporting my own well-being, whether that be mentally or physically, whatever, because at the end of the day, I am trying to help people heal their relationship with food, and I need to be in the best headspace possible because I'm human. I'm not, like, I don't have a perfect relationship with food. I'm not perfect. And this year has been tough for everyone.
Yeah, in really tough. Ways.
And I think aside from the food stuff, it's not just food. Food isn't what makes us healthy. It's the way we talk ourselves and the practices that we do every day and how much sleep we get every night and how hydrated we're keeping ourselves and the relationships that we're invested into. So for me, what inspires me now is that overall picture and making sure that there is balance in whatever it may be, physical, mental, all aspects of well-being. And although I am a nutritionist, I am very, very passionate about getting the word out there that it's not just food that makes up our well-being. Mm.
That was really beautifully put, and
it
definitely makes sense. It is a whole
big picture.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Bigger picture than just food. And well, something that I've seen that you're interested in from your Instagram page is movement. How does that play a part in your life?
So I used to, probably even just before lockdown happened, my version of working out was going to the gym, lifting a few weights, running on the treadmill for 20 minutes. And I didn't really have a clue what I was doing, to be honest. But when we were put
into lockdown,
yeah, exactly. But I just knew that I wanted to move my body. Yeah. I just didn't know exactly what the best way to do that was. So I just flagged it. And then when we were put into lockdown, my very good friend Georgie said, she's got an online workout platform. And she was like, I'm going to give you access to these workouts. Just try them out, see what you think. And they were very low impact, very different to anything I'd ever done. And it just made me feel so powerful. I've genuinely never felt so strong and energized, and the mental headspace that I'm in through doing these workouts, it's been pretty life-changing, which sounds like a big thing to say. And that's not me saying, go and do these workouts and you're going to feel great. That just means I found the right movement for my body.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes it might just be a stretch. I'm not pounding the yoga mat every day doing all these like ridiculous exercises. I'm just focusing on, because I'm a slim built person, I find it really difficult to build muscle, like honestly, so, so difficult. So I feel like I'm really strengthening myself doing these workouts. So yeah, they've just worked for me. Because we know movement is important. We know that when we move our bodies, we feel great and there's loads of other benefits to it. But it doesn't mean you have to do a HIIT workout every day or you have to go running every day. I used to run a lot, and I've actually got a bit of a dodgy knee because I dislocated it when I was 17 and I probably shouldn't have ever been running on it. Yeah. But I just thought I had to run because it was exercise and it was good for me. It's not the case at all. So I don't run anymore.
Well, it seems that you've really tried so many different things, and more recently you found exactly what works for you. And that's such a key message to take out of that, both for movement, for nutrition, and for the whole big picture.
Yeah, definitely. It's the biggest thing I can say is just do not compare your version of healthy to someone else's, because someone else's version of healthy might be running every day. That might just work for them and they might feel great and they get that high and adrenaline through running. I never got that. It's not for me.
I was talking to a family friend the other day and she said she's got a friend who runs marathons once a month.
When I was doing my psychology degree, my health professor said the two most strenuous things you can ever put your body through is running a marathon or being a ballet dancer. And I was like, oh, cool. I was like, okay, so I'm never going to run a marathon.
That's very fair enough. I mean, I would love to be able to do it. I don't think it will ever happen. Maybe
it's never going to happen for me. Oh, I don't even think half.
So I guess we're coming to the end of this podcast episode, but I've just got two final questions for you, Sophie. The first one is, what is next for you on your journey?
So we've just announced the book. So that was my big project that I was working on.
Congratulations for your book. I am very excited for that to be coming out. And a final question, which is, could you sum up for us in a sentence, a few words or a quote, any advice that you have for others on their journeys in nutrition?
That's a difficult one. Probably I would say support your own well-being while supporting others. I do think a lot of nutrition professionals go into nutrition because they've had some sort of difficult relationship themselves with food. That's not the case all the time, but I do see it a lot. So it is very, very important to make sure you're doing the best for you whilst you're obviously supporting other people's well-being. So yeah, I'm very, very passionate about good mental health.
Yeah, They are some really lovely words of advice. Thank you, Sophie. And thank you so much for being here today and sharing your journey with us. If you don't follow Sophie already, you can find her on Instagram at Sophie's Healthy Kitchen. Listen to her podcast, Forking Wellness. Find her book coming out in January, or you can learn more about Sophie and find her recipes on her website, sophieshealthykitchen.com. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me on and taking the time to listen to me, because normally it's me on the podcast interviewing and talking to other people. So thank you so much for hearing my story.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much, Sophie, for joining me today and sharing your journey and experiences. It's been a pleasure to get to know you, about how your journey developed, and the advice that you have shared throughout this episode. What I have taken is to keep organized, to network and to talk with others within the nutrition profession, and to support oneself to be able to support others the best that we can. And thank you to all of you who have joined me on the journey of this podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, I am sure that you're going to love next week's journey. So make sure to hit the subscribe button to be one of the first to hear. And if you love hearing about others' journeys as much as I love to share them, please give this podcast a 5-star review. It will help us to reach more people. I wish Sophie and all of you luck on your journeys. I hope you join me next Sunday to discover more journeys in nutrition.